You're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast, hosted by Joe Hunter on the Sound of Life at soundoflife.org.
One of the most dangerous things that you can do is to compare your story to everyone else's. Comparing your story to someone else's just because you went to the same high school, roomed together in college, doesn't mean that God has the same plan for your life. Yet so much of your time is wasted comparing stories. I'm not talking to you probably, but I mean, just it can be. So you just have to watch for that. Life never seems fair when you give in to the trap of comparison, but consider God's point of view. God is sovereign over all. There's nothing he can't do, and there is no accidents in his economy. He sees the end from the beginning, and he's written your story with every little detail. You are where you are today because God ordained it. He isn't perplexed by your current status. He knows exactly what you need and when you need it. The easiest way to trust God's heart is to fix your eyes on his promises. Stop comparing your story to everyone else's. Dangerous. Freedom comes when you live in the sphere God has placed you in right now. That was his plan. That's his idea. It's also a thought from Lena Abujamra. Oh, yeah. She has a wonderful ministry.
Your daily dose of encouragement.
Everything's okay. Keep your arms and legs inside until we come to a complete stop.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show. The Sound of Life.
I thought I'd mention books, since books are kind of a big topic since I got back from vacation. Particular type of books, children's books, as a matter of fact. I want you to know that the New York City Public Library said, we're not throwing anything out. We don't throw out books, okay? And I think the six books by Dr. Seuss that were not going to be printed anymore, they're all gone because collectors got them and stuff, or people that want them. It's too bad. They're probably not going to end up, none of those are going to end up in the garbage, are they? But sometimes books do. And in Turkey, these garbage collectors back in 2017 had this wonderful idea. Why don't we save these? You know, it's just common sense, kind of, isn't it? You're looking at these and somebody goes, wait a minute, right? I mean, come on. You just know that. You don't have to be told about that. So they started cleaning them up and refurbishing them. And they had this old brick used to be a factory, and they repurposed the building, and they set up bookshelves, and they stacked them full with these discarded books. They were destined for the incinerator before being collected from the trash. They got so many of them, and people started checking them out. At first, it was just for people, you know, with the department, I guess. And it got so popular, they had to hire somebody to manage the books. I think that's called the librarian in this country. But this all started in September of 2017, and today it is really thriving. So they bring them back, and they spruce them up. They brush them up, right? God does way more than that to you. You're not just dusted off and brushed up to look good, okay? You're changed from the inside. Your heart has changed. But this vacant brick factory has been repurposed, and they say it's just a perfect site. And it has long corridors in it. It's perfect for the bookshelves. You can go right along there. They now have 17 specific categories. They have novels, children's books, books in English and in French, of course, and a quiet little nook to read. And there ain't nothing like looking at what you would typically call, you know, somebody that works outside and doing a hard, laborious job to collect our garbage, sitting down in a quiet little nook and enjoying a book. Reading has always been really cool. One of the people said, as a child, I would have loved to have books. We lived in a poor district, and often there weren't any books on sale, not that we could afford them anyway. But, I mean, it's pretty amazing. It spawned an outreach in 2019 where they converted a garbage collection truck into a mini mobile library to service local schools and swap books with public libraries. Is that cool? The mayor of the town said, on one hand, there were those who were leaving these books on the street, and on the other hand, others are looking for these books. It's kind of the story of life. It's kind of the way it is. And they said that, well, these workers aren't the only people who take away the trash. It's pretty cool. Thought you'd love a little book story this morning. Yeah.
Hey, this is Danny Gokey, and you're listening to my favorite morning show, the Cup of Joe Morning Show.
As I was checking out a Chinese legend, you may have heard of this before, Cy Wang lost one of his prized horses. His neighbor expressed sorrow for his loss, but he said he was unconcerned. He said, who knows if it may be a good thing for me? Surprisingly, the lost horse returned home with another horse. As the neighbor congratulated him, Cy Wing said, who knows if it may be a bad thing for me? As it turned out, his son broke his leg when he rode the new horse. This seemed like a misfortune. Until the army arrived at the village to recruit all able-bodied men to fight in this big war, because of his son's injury, he wasn't recruited, which ultimately could have spared him from death. And this is the story behind the Chinese proverb, which teaches that a difficulty can be a blessing in disguise and vice versa. This ancient wisdom has a close parallel in the Bible. In Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verse 12, the author observes, who knows what is good for a person in life? Indeed, none of us know what the future holds. And adversity might have positive benefits, and prosperity might have ill effects. Each day offers new opportunities, joys, struggles, and sufferings. As God's beloved children, you can rest in God's sovereignty and trust Him through the good and bad times alike. God has made the one as well as the other. He's with us in all the events in our lives and promises His loving care. That was a pretty cool devotional there, put together by Pofang Chia. And so, Lord, thank you for ordering our lives. Help us to praise you in both good and bad times, believing that you work all things for the ultimate good of those who love you. Amen.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
I wanted to give a heads up to a person that you probably never heard of. And I was thinking about Black History Month last month. And since I was out for 2 weeks, pretty much of that, then I have the right to bring up more people. She was very influential when I was coming along in North Carolina. She was born Elrita Melton Alexander and married a Ralston. I knew her as Elrita Alexander. I knew her as a judge, okay? But she was born in a small town in North Carolina, and she ended up becoming a judge when only a handful of practicing female judges, not to mention Black female lawyers and judges in the state of North Carolina. She had an unusual career as a trial attorney and a district court judge. And she has been noted for, quote, refusal to allow the circumstances of her birth, the realities of her time, and the limitations imposed by others define her destiny. Her accomplishments as Judge Alexander's legacy has remained largely unrecognized and her story untold. And that's where I come in. Because millions will hear, but no. Well, a few of you will, but She always an amazing person. She was known because of the way she handed down judgments. And she really did not like, she thought, well, you know, how do we stop people from throwing garbage out of the cars? Because people would be brought in for littering. And there's signs up everywhere. Every neighborhood in this country has got signs up, so much for littering. I mean, I've seen some really high-priced fines for littering. I've seen some that were a couple hundred dollars or something, you know. And you still see people just, I don't know. They because it's a sign and the law and who knows. So she decided that she was going to make an example out of those people who were more than willing to pay the monetary fine. But she said, no, I think what you need to do is put on a reflective jacket, get yourself a garbage bag and get out there and clean up that garbage on the highway. And people would be out there during the rush hour traffic, so people that knew them going by, you know, would see them out there. Ain't nothing more humble than picking up trash. Well, of course, you created some of that. That's why you got a fine. But that's what I knew her for. But she growing up, went to college in Greensboro. At the time, it was known as North Carolina Agricultural and Technical College, which is what they call a historically Black school. And she became a high school teacher in South Carolina. And that's where she got married to Tony. Alexander, and they call him Tony. But she ended up becoming limited access. This is interesting. Limited access to law schools in North Carolina for black women. And to her husband's insistence, she applied and was the first black woman admitted to Columbia Law School. That law school. That was in 1943 at the age of 24. The significance of this achievement is highlighted by the fact that only three black students, all men, had been admitted before her. Initially viewing her legal education as something to pass the time, quote unquote, she eventually warmed up to the idea of seriously pursuing a legal career, grew increasingly popular among the student body, and became the first black woman to graduate from Columbia Law School in 1945. And she passed the North Carolina bar exam in 1947 and became the first black woman to practice law in North Carolina. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, it's pretty amazing. She became the first black woman to argue before the Supreme Court of North Carolina. A lot of firsts in her life, as it turned out. It's interesting how she was guided and did that. And it's a fascinating person. Elrita Melton Alexander Ralston.
Your daily dose of encouragement.
I've got a smile on my face and a twinkle in my eye.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show. The sound of life.
I found out about an award-winning chef. His name is Alon Shaya. I guess he was raised in Philadelphia, but born in Jerusalem, I believe. But he visited the Holocaust Museum, and they found out that they had culinary-related artifacts that not always on display to the public. And he was astounded to learn, as you will be too, that the people who were there in captivity in the concentration camps, one of the things that they did to distract themselves was to recall their favorite recipes. And they would write them down in secret on scraps of hidden paper and cloth and things. And it like everything else, it kind of stuns you because you think, here are these people almost facing certain death in the most miserable conditions ever. They have, and one of the things that I've learned in the last few years by looking at this practically on a daily basis because of seeing the Twitter post from the Holocaust, I mean, actually it's called Auschwitz Memorial. That's the Twitter name. But one of the things you realize is is so prevalent throughout history with captive people. They were taking the Nazis were taking the Jews' identity away from them. That was what they tried to do. And of course, here they are getting it back and remembering those recipes and stuff. And he wondered, you know, is there any left? And he met some people and stuff and was going over some of the recipes. He kept thinking over the years. I mean, he did this about 10 years ago, I think, when he found out. But then he learned about a man named Stephen, who was a Holocaust survivor. And he volunteers at the museum, the Holocaust Museum, and he saw the collection of more than 140 of his family recipes. And he wanted to help him experience the taste of the food made by his mother and grandmothers, food that he hadn't savored in 75 years. So he translated 13 recipes from Hungarian and the book's table of contents, working off a high-resolution copy. The chef then recreated several of the dishes for him. That's a really pretty cool story. And that's uplifting news right there. And it's one of the things that I just thought I'd share with you. Star chef really helping out Holocaust survivors, right? Remember that. So it's a pretty cool thing. And I posted that article there on the Cup of Joe Morning Show Facebook page for you.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
I just saw something from iMom, which I posted on the Cup of Joe Morning Show Facebook page. And kids are tuning in to ASMR, it's called. It's actually ASMR. That's the abbreviation, but it's pronounced ASMR. And it's kind of on the stuff you're too old to understand. That may be at the top of it right there. But like a lot of things with parenting, we have to do our research because are your kids safe? Your kids like, oh man, that Asmir. I mean, I don't know how you would say it. I just saw the very beginnings of a video, and that's what it's all about. And you know, you're kind of like, what is it? How do you pronounce ASMR? Asmir? 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 Anyway, and why are they all whispering? And that was one of the things that was weird. That's because if they talked normally, it would be way too loud. Let me explain what it is. First of all, it stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response. So in plain English, it's a tingling sensation that comes from repetitive triggers. The triggers can be sound or touch-based. Unlike goosebumps, the tingling usually starts at your scalp before working its way down your spine. Scientists started studying it as a tool to help with anxiety, depression, and insomnia. It's kind of like when I was in high school, college, I had the same man cut my hair back when I had. He'd say, oh, the girls must love your hair. It's all thick and everything. Yeah. Didn't appreciate it enough then, did I? No, but that's another story. But he had a thing that he would put on his hands, probably old school now. It had to be made by Hamilton Beach, you know, and it vibrated and it would give your scalp a massage. That is the greatest thing ever. Just saying. So I was participating in that like 100 years ago and didn't even know what it was. Probably didn't even have a name then. But you want to know how popular they are? You knew I was coming to that, right? Usually it's an attractive female sitting there, girl, though I saw, and she's whispering into this microphone. That is, as they say in the business, it's so hot that it picks up every tiny sound. I don't want to do it for you, but it's like everything. Skin brushing on skin, your mouth opening, breathing. Okay, so that's why they whisper what they're going to be doing. I'm going to be opening Pringles. They're barbecue-flavored chips, and you can hear the thing popping and all this. I'm trying to emulate it, but anyway, here's the thing. The most popular one has almost 3 million YouTube subscribers. I mean, how many things you watch on YouTube and they're like, yeah, just hit the subscribe button, please. And you don't, but that's 3 million subscribers. So kids are into this. One was describing a bottle of stress relief lotion while tapping the bottle and then rubbing it on her hands. And you'd be like going, what? The writer of the iMom article said, oh, now I get it. No? Yeah, me either. The closest I can relate is the thing about getting your hair washed or brushed, right? You know, feeling the sound. But I'm not saying I'm going to pull up a YouTube video and watch it. Probably not. But it's all over. And that's the reason I'm talking about it, because it's so huge and popular. And in the article that iMom posted, iMom.com, there's that video I was talking about. It's very typical. Right there. And what I'm going to tweet this morning, Asmir looks harmless, but with the wrong click, it can get really bizarre really quick. Okay? And, so what to do if your child is really into it? How do you approach your kids about that? Okay? Ask your child, have you heard of Asmir? What do you know about it? Okay, it's a good thing. Check out the article on the Cup of Joe Morning Show Facebook page.
The Sound of Life.
Dina is a single mother of 6 children. Her husband is lost. She doesn't know if he is alive. That's what I'm talking about right there. Her youngest never met his father. He was kidnapped during the war. When she was pregnant, Dina tried to commit suicide several times, so she started hearing about Jesus from her neighbor Anna. After a while, she joined the Nurses AIDS training program as a student. After 2 years of attending nursing school, she said, and I quote, my circumstances are the same, but God is changing me. I have peace in my heart, and I love sharing what I learned in the nursing school and what I'm learning from the Discovery Bible studies with my neighbors and relatives. I teach Bible lessons to my children before they go to sleep. Now I feel like I have a purpose in life. Oh, you do. That's a good thing you feel that way, because you do. And God knew that all along. It was coming out of some ministry of Lena Abijamra there. And so Women's History Month. So I can actually do a day late from the thing like that. Nothing bad about that. So real women right there. Persevering, not getting the celebrity status, but man, they're doing what Jesus wants them to do. They're living out their purpose and they realize it. Loving that this morning. Yes.
The Sound of Life.
just reading about a scientist discovering a snail. Now, I hope you're done with your breakfast, because this gets a little rough here this morning. I've never heard of such a thing, but it actually can decapitate its head, and then its head goes about eating, and then the rest of the body regenerates and stuff. Very bizarre. And my first thought was, I don't want to see an evolutionist come out and tell me. I don't think any animal would decapitate its head. We're going to evolve, Bob. This is the only way we can do it right here. We got to do this. Man, oh, man. Oh, the God's creation is absolutely incredible. And, of course, right now we're thinking and very excited. Isn't it interesting how in the spring time, where you have hope because life is being regenerated. Right now, we've had a pretty snowy, wintry winter. I mean, I think it's been not a record-breaking one by any means, but pretty good. The ski slopes and the Catskills have had a banner year, I do believe. So most people right now are like, yes, let's get into some warmer weather. Let's get the sun drying up that snow, get that gone. Anticipation is such an incredible thing. It's the anticipation. The planning for the vacation, the realization that you're going on a vacation is way more exhilarating than, well, being in the middle of it. It's very interesting, isn't it? So we're in this time, and to go along with that, more and more people are being vaccinated. Yes. I don't know if you knew where I was going with that or not. But, and now we have three in the United States out there. A lot of talk about that. A lot of people doing research and looking, and there's a lot of, talk about the companies and the vaccine and what they did to test it and what is in it. And, boys, there's a lot of talk about that on probably both sides of the spectrum, right? But it is... it's effective. I mean, it works. And these are companies that have a lot riding on the line. Their names are out there big time. Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, Pfizer. Something happens. And I've seen things that in my lifetime, and maybe you have too, where something has happened, where a name brand was out there and, didn't look good. And it hurts when they all get taken off the shelf or whatever it is. I mean, it can be almost impossible to recover. So they're very much in on making sure they have a first-class product. I'm convinced of that. But I've seen a lot of the hope that it's given people and the thrill and experience, just kind of like it's kind of good, right? Kind of neat. But at the same time, you kind of think, that's not our savior. The vaccine is not a savior. And I'm very privileged to be able to see some of the incredible evil things that people are doing. And I say privileged because those people are followers of Christ. And they are going through unspeakable tortures and torments. I mean, from having the house burned down to just worse. They know the truth, and they're not going to. It's all designed to get them, you're going to be, And yet it still keeps spreading. The devil just will never understand that this persecution is going to spread it. Amazing, because it's unadulterated love. And it's just really amazing.
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show.
Good morning. Good morning.
The Sound of Life.
I was reading something last night, I think, about how, in eternity, and I don't know about you, but if you lay there at night, and you're thinking about eternity, it really kind of blows your mind because it's just something that we cannot get a hold of that. And maybe it all started because I was talking about Edwin Hubble yesterday was the anniversary, he had a photograph that showed that there were as many galaxies as there are stars in a galaxy. When you learn that there's a billion stars, whatever that is, how many stars in a galaxy? Well, how many galaxies are there? Two, maybe? Three? No. Billions. And it really, your mind just explodes. And that's kind of the whole idea. That's what the purpose of the article was, that there's new things to learn about God. Now, get this. Are you holding on? Okay. This is one of these things that is true, but it's just really hard to, you know, get a hold of. But there's so many things to learn about God that you will never exhaust learning about God and learning about the nature of God in eternity. Wow.
Your daily dose of encouragement.
I say start small and work up. Now try again, boy. Kids nowadays know it all.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show. The sound of life.
Really great story about a 16-year-old. You're in high school. Do you have the opportunity to do that? You know, you can do that no matter how old you are, but I guess they offer it as a course in high school. By all means, take it. And after you hear this, you will. If you have the opportunity to take the CBR training, I've taken it. It's been many years. You would just absolutely pray. If something happened near me, like happened to Toriel, I definitely would be, God, just let that memory kick in. It probably would. Toriel Norwood, 16 years old, took her high school CPR training course, of course, to help her toward her goal of becoming a nurse. And, of course, in that class, it teaches you the skill set that would, in turn, help you save a life, of course. And, of course, nobody knew, except God. Little did she know that that person would be her best friend. That's right. In the 11th grade, unfortunately, back on February 20th, they were in a car crash. And Toriel pulled her best friend from the car, checked her pulse, and there wasn't one. Listen, what must have been going through her mind? You know, I know what was going through her heart. What's going through her mind? I know how to do this. She checks her pulse, and there's not any. And, of course, those instincts kick in. She'd earned her CPR certificate less than 24 hours earlier. 30 compressions and two breaths later, she came to and has been thanking her bestie for saving her life ever since. Yes, what an awesome story. Yes, that's what we're talking about right there.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
I just came across this article just last night about the Romans, and I'm thinking, you know, this is happening in history with the Romans now. The Romans now. I'm reading it in, just totally secular look at it. What was going on in Rome in the 40s, and this is the time that the Church of Christ was growing, and of course, a couple of years after that, the Apostle Paul came along, and those letters that he wrote to folks in church in Rome. And Colossian, Ephesus, and Corinth, places like that. And I was thinking about the culture. So here was Rome just steeped in and worshipped physical culture. And so here was Claudius, who was born to Caligula, and he took over when Claudius was assassinated. Caligula was assassinated. Claudius took over, petrified because of his physical determinants. His wives basically made him look like an idiot. I mean, that was their goal in life, it seemed. And you're talking about a culture where if you didn't live up to the physical expectations that they had, children were murdered. Sorry. At a young age, that is a historical fact. And from what I understand, they were quite the partiers as well. Women were not very well respected. And so there was a lot of this going on. I mean, you kind of get a hold of this culture there. By the way, Claudius was done in. He was assassinated too, but it had nothing to do with his leadership. It was one of his wives that did it. And here's the guy that took over. His son, his first son, took over. Nero was the one that took over. So you see that history playing out there. So when you read through the Bible and Paul's letters, this is what's going on in their culture. And so you become a follower of Jesus, who very much respects women, very much respects the institution of marriage, very much respects people who cannot see or people who are crippled. You know, touching them, embracing them, healing them. Wow. So you become a follower of the Messiah, Jesus. And you, I mean, you think you're standing out in the culture just like in those days? You're like a light on a midnight hill. I mean, you know, and that's not much different from you today, is it? Not much at all.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
Oh, you're a smooth talker. You are.
The Sound of Life.
I got to go over this before it gets too late. I keep forgetting about this this tweet that people are talking about. It's going around. You may have seen it, but it's absolutely, it expresses some days we're going through. Hello, Professor. I will be a little late to class today. I'm not sure how late, but I will be there. I have been trying to find a way out of my room for over 20 minutes. There is a very big bug between me and the door. And when I move, it moves. And when it flies, its wings make this awful whirring noise like some vassal of horror. We are locked in a stalemate, and I'm at every disadvantage. And I wholeheartedly believe the bug is aware of this. Respectfully, I am in tears. It was originally a Monday motivation, a Monday state. You stare whatever bug you're facing today, and you get by that door, okay?
Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah. Waking up with a cup of Joe.
Good morning!
Good morning.
Rise and shine.
The Sound of Life.
In an effort to make you wonder, what in the world kind of news sources does he look at? I read you the headline. It's one of the most extreme examples of regeneration ever seen. Put that cereal spoon down just for a second, all right? The headline reads, "This sea slug can chop off its head and grow an entire new body twice," all right? And it does it itself. I've got the photographs. I've got the video. I'll share it with you, all right? Now, we've known there are cases of animal regeneration. I saw one of those, and I highly recommend this video, kind of a documentary. It's called My Octopus Teacher. I think that's the name of the. It's about a man who, from a kid, learned to dive, free dive. Okay, he takes a breath, goes down in the water. He's off the coast of South Africa, and in going down there in the solitude of being under, I don't know, 40, 50 feet of water and stuff, and looking at all that was going on there. There's an octopus, and he just observes it for a few days. He goes down there like every day. And then the octopus kind of reaches out to him. It's pretty amazing. They kind of get to be buddies. I know it sounds kind of weird. But anyway, in the story, there's a shark that lives in the neighborhood. There's a couple of them. And they chase these octopus around. And he got a hold of it one time, bit off one of its. It was very difficult to watch, he said. Bit off one of its tentacles. And he said, I can't intervene in this. This is the way it normally happens. But then he said, after a few days, I noticed it was there's a little tentacle regrowing there. And he said, wow, it was really exciting. So there's animal regeneration, and in most cases, replacing damaged or lost body parts with an identical replacement occurs when, as I said, arms, legs, tail, something like that are lost to predators, and they're regrown. It's pretty amazing. But these sea slugs, which belong to a group that I can't pronounce, Cichoglossians, I don't know. Anyway, they take it to the next level by regrowing an entirely new body. Which one regrow? I guess the body regrows from the head. Okay. And when I first read it, I was under the impression they grew a new head. The whole thing is really wild. And I mean, if that's not strange enough, the slugs' heads can survive autonomously for weeks, thanks in part to their unusual ability to photosynthesize like plants, which they hijack from the algae they eat. And if that's still not enough in this bizarro realm, the original decapitated body can also go on living for days, even months, without their heads. But the head starts growing a new body. That's the whole thing right there. Okay. I mean, I was watching the video, and it kind of got discovered by accident, as a lot of things do. And what thrills me is the fact that these people who study, and you would think they knew everything. And I'm not saying they act like that or anything, But, you know, then they here we are in 2021, and they're like, that's never been seen before. You know, they find new things that are living. Most of these things are in the ocean, but it's an incredible thing to witness. And it does it itself, and it made me think, as I often do, in the whole thing, in somebody trying to argue for natural selection, you know, and just that that somehow by happenstance, everything that's created happened in some kind of mystical nature way that puts things together, survival of the fittest, and things. I don't think this severing your head would come into survival of the fittest, but I just think, you know, can't you just imagine there's a couple of slugs and one of them's talking to the other one, you know, they're thinking about survival. It's like 100 million years ago, right? And they're like going, hey, Bob, I don't know, man, we're not going to make it. We're not going to survive, man. I've got an idea. We have to sever our head. Maybe our bodies will grow new, and then that way we can survive. Like that, anyway.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
Slap some bacon on a biscuit and let's go. We're burning daylight.
The Sound of Life.
Today is considered the one-year anniversary. I guess the World Health Organization declared COVID, as it's known around here, COVID-19. Go down south, I guess it's Corona, at the coronavirus. So, you know, you think back on it. First of all, it was no toilet paper. What? I guess somebody said, well, you know, there could be shortages. It was kind of like the Y2K thing all over again. It really was very reminiscent of that. Oh, man, it's going to be trains won't be moving. There won't be nothing moving. You better stock up. You know, load up the freezer. Get about a ton of toilet paper in your house that lasts you for the next 10 years, you know. So nobody had toilet paper. And then the next thing was Clorox wipes. We got to wipe everything down. You get a delivery, leave it on your store porch for 3 days and all that kind of stuff. You know, there's that initial, like, panic almost. And then as it got warmer and stuff, the bicycles were sold out, you know. So bicycle makers, I guess, did okay. Peloton, the indoor bicycle, they had such a demand, they actually bought a company so that they could keep up with the demand of it. But there's, you know, there's a serious side to it. Women really took a big hit, we found out. You know, women, a lot of women, they lost their jobs or they had to stay home, take care of the kids because the kids are home trying to learn, trying to do that. And there was you could see where there was discrepancy, you know, going to school with meals and education and instruction and warmth and all that entails was that was a real benefit for many families. Now they're at home. You know, it was detrimental. Still working through that. Not to mention a lot of other things as well. But it really showed. It showed human greed came out really fast, you know. And now you go in the store, they have pallets of hand sanitizer, Clorox wipes, toilet paper all the way to the next store. You know, I mean, it's just everywhere. You're like, well, we don't even look at it anymore. We're like, oh, I got enough toilet paper a year ago. It's kind of the way it is. But I laugh about it. It's a nervous laugh, you know, because when something like this happens, and we're definitely holding our, you know, saying, Lord, thank you. And for the scientists that work on vaccines and things. But sometimes I think, you know, where do we put our real hope, right? That's what you really show. Churches have done an amazing job. They really have. You know, theaters are even starting to open more now, you know, in different places. So anyway, there's a lot going on, swirling around in my mind. But here's something I got a hold of from a man. I did an interview with this guy. He's very famous, or he was at one time. He became a Christian and quit his TV day job. And I asked John Tesh if he got a hard time for that. And he said, that's putting it politely, you know, giving up a six-figure salary for doing birthdays every day. You kidding me? You know, he loves music. He loves God. It's pretty amazing. But he said, you know, not everything is canceled. Sunshine's not canceled. Love is not canceled. Relationships are not canceled. Reading is not canceled. Naps are not canceled. Going for a walk is not canceled. Kindness is not canceled. Imagination is not canceled. Conversations are not canceled. Hope is not canceled and never will be canceled.
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
Good morning, sunshine.
The sound of life.
I'm reading about efficiency numbers. I can't say that word. How effective the vaccines are in the numbers, the percentage numbers and stuff. They can be a little misleading, but it's good. It's all good. They're all good. They're great. They're all fine. We got three vaccines. It's great. All excited about that. It's pretty amazing, right? Whew, boy, some of the things we just like hyper do. Something else. But I wanted to get on something that was pretty amazing because I saw this quote from Charles Spurgeon. And it reminded me of what my workout instructor said one time that I thought was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And she said, people, now this is bike riding, okay, cycling. So you basically have two things that affect your cycling effort. Resistance, all right, and speed. Obviously, the higher the resistance, the harder to get speed. But you grow that way. So she said, people ask me, which one should I concentrate on? You know, the resistance or the speed? And she said, yeah, both. Need to concentrate on both. And then she said, what were you expecting me to say? Take a nap? You know, take a nap. Everything, you'll wake up stronger. Everything will be fine. It doesn't work like that. And I just thought, man, that is brutally honest. Absolutely. But Charles Spurgeon was asked, what is more important, praying or reading the Bible? You know how he answered that? He would say, what is more important, breathing in or breathing out? Woo!
The sound of life.
What I'm about to tell you could really help you out. There's a good chance that you maybe have an iron deficiency. It was interesting. I'll just tell you a little personal story because I've never had that, to the best of my knowledge, never had my blood work come back with low iron, but it did one time in my entire life. And it was when I was going through trying to figure out what was wrong with me. Anyway, and the skin specialist had said, well, you've got this herpetiformis thing and stuff, and gave me some medicine. Anyway, so I had low blood, and the doctor said, well, you need an endoscope and a colonoscopy. And we're like, okay. So I got that, and just to see if I was bleeding internally or something. You know, there's a reason I had low iron. And the doctor said, oh, you're celiac. Patient. He told me what that was, showed me the photographs of my intestine right there and all that. So it was interesting because that really, in my mind, cleared up. Now I know what is up. Now I realize I can never have pizza, donuts, or biscuits again the rest of my life. But that's but a lot of people, especially in other places in the world, developing countries, the need for iron is great, especially in women. A lot of people have an iron deficiency. Vegetarians struggle with that as well, too. So what I'm trying to say is that here's something for you right here. It's interesting. And I just realized, though, that you're going to have like soup every day. I think, well, I don't know. I guess you could work with it. It's really crazy. When I first read this, I thought they are whacked. But they're two Canadian medical school graduates, young whippersnappers right there, created an incredibly simple and delightful solution called Lucky Iron Fish. See why I thought it was a joke? So basically, it's no more than basically a specially designed iron ingot in a whimsical shape of a fish. They picked fish because culturally, I guess in, where were they trying to think of it? In Cambodia. That's where they were working. In Cambodia, it is a lucky symbol. Of course, if you're follower of Jesus, you may think, oh, that was the early symbol. That's an international symbol for being a follower of Jesus. So that's what I'm going with. If you take that little ingot and boil it in water for 10 minutes, you will have enough iron for the day in that solution. So what you do is you put it in your soup, you know, heat your soup and all that, and you get the iron in there, right? If you use it every day, it will last for 5 years. Wow. And you know how you know it's time to get a new one? The smile on the fish slowly wears away. And when it's no longer happy, it's time to get a new one. It's true. I was reading this and I thought, is this some kind of joke or something? I don't know. I posted it so you can check it all out for yourself. Make sure it's real. Maybe something you want to get a hold of. It's very simple. Really idea, and maybe that's what you ought to go for. But I thought a fish shape with a smile on the fish and everything. I thought, I don't know.
You look like a man who could use more coffee.
Bring one on, yes.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
Evidence that you have a jello brain when you take somebody's wheelchair. Really? You're like, going, really? Man, oh man, you need to be renewed, man. I'll tell you, it happened to Raymond Tavita back in 2017. He was born with spina bifida. Shriners surgeons corrected his foot deformity, but they didn't remove his reliance on a wheelchair. He's doing great. He was shocked when somebody stole his main source of mobility. So were other people. State Representative John Mizuno shared his story. He's in Hawaii. And everybody responded within a few weeks. See, this is the thing. You got one little unleavened, one little piece of yeast that's going to affect the whole thing. But it turned out to be really great because he had 25 donated wheelchairs, a couple of them electronic at that. But then he started. So what he did was he's paying it forward. He started a nonprofit called the Ohana You Don't See. And he's asking for people to donate wheelchairs they no longer need so he can get them to disabled people who can put them to use. And I'm thinking of Johnny Erickson Tata. She started that about 30 years ago. So it's called Wheels for the World. And it's in on her website, johnnyandfriends.org. I posted the link, johnnyandfriends.org/ministry/wheels-for-the-anyway. But I posted, it's real easy. Wheels for the World right there. They provide life-changing mobility for the hope of the gospel to people impacted worldwide. And when you see the children around, I mean, you're talking about people who drag themselves around because they have no form or they make some type of a makeshift. You know, in third world countries, everything is makeshift in with a lot of people. If they have something, they just make it. From toys to cooking utensils, everything. It's astounding. And it shows an incredible creativity. But man, a wheelchair, they just light up the smiles. Just unbelievable. It changed their whole world. So I thought it'd be a good opportunity to acquaint you, if you're not, with Johnny and Friends, Wheels for the World. You can find out all about the ministry, education and training and help and inspiration and support and all that kind of stuff. And all you got to do is look for it in your Cup of Joe Morning Show news feed. There it is.
The Sound of Life.
Abby Watts is one of the key people in iMom, which I like to post. I'm going to post another one, too. But she's talking about a wonderful conservative woman who married. She got her last name now from a star quarterback, Hasselbeck. Yeah, her name is Elizabeth. And she wrote a book about surviving a reality show, but barely surviving motherhood. And I never watched that. I'm one of those people that when I saw they were going to have, and don't get me wrong about anybody sitting around talking about, where they're just going to have a cup of coffee and talk about it. I mean, it could be okay, but whatever you call it. Anyway, she was on The View. But here's an account of her motherhood that she had that she wants you to know about, right? She said, we celebrated the last day of summer with friends in the park, and the anticipation was building for Grace's, that's her daughter, first day of school ever. The phone rang, and a serious yet concerned tone greeted my ear. Hello, Mrs. Hasselbeck? This is so-and-so school, and we are calling just to make sure that Grace will be joining us this year. And she responded, of course, she's so excited. She has her lunchbox all set. And then came the pause that I've heard comes before an avalanche. Mrs. Hasselbeck, the first day of school was today. She said, I don't even remember saying goodbye to the caller or hanging up. The big bow, the monogrammed lunchbox, the ruffled socks, the seersucker dress, nothing I prepared ahead of time mattered. We, meaning me, had failed. And then shame set in. Elizabeth Hasselbeck, survivor, survived Survivor, The View, and Fox News, shared that story in her book, which is titled Point of View, and it hit a mom. It hit a nerve in Abby, who's a mom, and she said the story does end beautifully as Elizabeth kissed Grace goodbye when she dropped her off at school, and she said, have a great first day, and a little boy said, it's actually the second day of school, and Elizabeth's response to the boy's perfect remedy for moms who feel the weight of imperfection. Elizabeth said, well, it's the first day for Grace. Pretty cool. So as Abby said, I've dropped the ball so many times, I think it might be coated in butter. We carry so much and beat ourselves up when we make mistakes. We try to overcompensate and win back our good mom status. Those words, well, it's the first day for Grace, are pivotal for moms who carry shame or regret for all the ways we've messed up. Maybe that's you. Every day is the first day for Grace. There's no time like the present to kick out shame and replace it with the truth of how you were created. So I'm going to tweet it out. You can take a big step in giving yourself grace when you stop asking yourself. And there's three questions, and I'll post this. Elizabeth Hasselbeck said, these questions put an extra burden on us. Question, how does she get all that done? Or, why am I so behind? Or, will I ever be enough? Okay? She's dealing with those in her book. All right? So, that's pretty cool. Every day is the first day of grace. That's what I'm gonna tweet out.
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show.
Got word later yesterday, and I knew that he was at home, kind of a hospice care, and he had been battling cancer, and he was born in 1934 in Argentina. A lot of people don't know how to pronounce his last name, I found out. And a lot of people have not heard that much about him. Quite an evangelist and book writer and preacher and teacher and on fire for God. Luis Palau. One of the things that he does is he coordinates youth events. He is known for that. And pulling people together, of course, I imagine over the last year that's kind of scale down a little bit, maybe. I don't know. But he has three sons, Kevin and Andrew and Keith. And for the life of me, is it Andrew, I think? I can't remember which one has taken over the ministry. It's been that way for at least a year or so, knowing that he was pretty sick and he could be near the end of his life. But it was yesterday morning that he passed. And there was a time when one of his sons was going to go to South America, leave. And Luis Palau lives out in out west, I think Oregon, I think. But Portland, yeah. His son was going to go down and, he was scheduled to go there for an evangelistic conference. But his father's very sick and stuff. And his father said, you go. You know, this is what God made you to do. You go and do that. If I go, they go to heaven while you're gone, then that's great for me. Okay? It's pretty cool. It was a great attitude that he had as well. And Lee Strobel, quite a story there. And book writer himself, from somebody who set out to prove that his wife's faith in Jesus was basically based on made-up stories. And he was an investigative journalist for the Chicago Tribune. I'd like to have that coming after you, right? He's going to investigate it. I'm going to prove to you, because I hate to see you get so hurt. And he ended up becoming one of the most on fire people for God there ever was, Lee Strobel. He said he visited with Luis Palau, and one of his last words were very important. He said, at the end of your life, when all is said and done, you'll never regret being courageous for Christ.
You've been listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast on the Sound of Life, the Hudson Valley's 100% listener-funded Christian radio station. For more information on upcoming events, contests, to ask for prayer, and to become a member of the Sound of Life family by supporting the station, visit us at soundoflife.org.